You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 131, An American Tale, Fievel Goes West, Caterwaul versus Ratigan.
Howdy, y'all. We're here on the Rootinous Tootinous Animation Podcast ever. Yeehaw! Arriba, arriba, ay, ay. Anyway, welcome all foreigners and partners and pilgrims to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. My name is Mason. I am your super awesome host for today's episode. I'm here with Chelsea Robson.
Hello. It doesn't look like I'm here, but I am.
Well, it doesn't look like she is here, but her lovely headshot profile pic will be floating and talking to us live. So Chelsea is in South America right now with that dang South American Wi-Fi. So we want to save on bandwidth and avoid we want to avoid the delays and lag and stuff. And she's just gonna go audio today. You will have to excuse our co-host Morgan Stradling, who is usually here, but she is not today. She's bogged down with work, and she's needed elsewhere tonight. But luckily, Chelsea and I are literally experts on Fievel Goes West, which is the animated film that we're discussing today. So we know everything about it. Chelsea knows all the songs. And we're going to have some live performances by Chelsea, so that'll be kind of cool.
We can throw that in at the end. Stick around, people.
I love a good sing-along. Yeah, so Animation Addicts Podcast, if this is the first time you've sat in with us, then welcome. If you're a recurring listener or watcher, then welcome back. Would it be safe to say we're like the greatest animation podcast ever? Like, can we just say it by now? The often imitated and often ridiculed. I'm just kidding. So anyway, today we are reviewing the Un-American Tale, T-A-Y-L, Fievel Goes West. So we're also going to be on the chat on YouTube and also rotoscopers.com/live. We have a chat wing box. So be part of the discussion. I haven't seen this film in forever. I saw this film like when I was in kindergarten. I barely remember. I remembered some things when I watched it this time. I was like, oh yeah. But
no, this was another one of those movies that Chelsea watched over and over and over.
Really?
It was. I think it's just the Western theme that was in my house. So I think that's probably one of the reasons. But I honestly really I dig this movie.
Okay. All right. So this was like my first time really like consciously watching it as an adult. I thought it was pretty interesting watching it again after all these years. This is Amblimation. It's kind of complicated. First of all, this is not a Don Bluth film. American Tale was. Getting to America was Don Bluth. Getting to the West was not Don Bluth, right?
Correct. So at this point in time, Don Bluth actually had, there was problems with the budget originally. Don Bluth and his animation studio, Sullivan Bluth Studios, were originally going to make the film. But then with American Tale, they're like, okay, we need to have this budget set aside. But Universal agreed, but said, actually, no, you're going to have to do it for the same amount of money that you did your other film for, American Tale, the original. And Don Bluth was like, I'm already doing something else that's like twice as much as that, or at least a couple million more than what that was. And so by doing that, I would have to lay off my people. And so I don't want to do that. So instead of doing this movie, he decided to do one of my absolute favorites, Rockadoodle. Woo!
Rockadoodle. Well.
Well, I mean, so that's where Don Bluth said he took his side and he went over there. Well, you know, that leaves our good friend Mr. Steven Spielberg to this whole project. And he says, okay. So he takes a couple directors. One was a former Disney animator, Phil Niblink. And then another one is Simon Wells, who is actually the grandson of Mr. H.G. Wells.
Oh, wow.
And so both of them went ahead and directed this. And both of them actually went on to later direct We're Back, A Dinosaur Story. You can check that out on Animation Addicts Podcast as well. That was a fun one.
Oh, yeah, we did a show on that one. Yeah, that was a good one.
That was a good... It's a good show.
It's a good show. I thought it was... Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting watching it again. Oh, it's also worth mentioning that we have Steve Hickner as the associate producer of this film. I have no idea what an associate producer does. I think it changes per studio, per production. Yeah. But yeah, he was definitely involved in it. So shout out to old Steve Hickner, who we love and we are his biggest fans.
True.
And... you know, it was successful, but it wasn't that successful. I don't think it ended up making as much money as An American Tale. Fievel goes just west enough to get...
Well, it was considered a success at the time, just because it did make back its budget. Well, I mean, the thing is, the ironic part about it is that it was being made for about $25 million, which was twice as much as Land Before Time. Yeah. So that was the ironic part, that Don Bluth did not direct this film just because of budgets. But anyway, that's all good. The thing is, like, it did come in with about $22 million on domestic within the U.S. And then total worldwide was about $40 million. So it did make money. And so that's always a good thing. But
and then there's the VHS market, you know?
Yeah, and that's probably where I saw it, because we definitely had the VHS, and that one, I'm sure, was a huge thing, just because a lot of those films at the time, they were really hitting hard with VHS. But here's an interesting part about the whole situation, was that the release date was November 22nd, 1991.
Yeah, any animation addict who knows their stuff will know that that was the same day that Disney's Beauty and the Beast was released. So,
yeah.
We had us a little competition going. Exactly. So November 22nd, 1991, Beauty and the Beast. Like, what else is there to say? It's Beauty and the Beast versus Fievel Goes West. It would have been interesting if Don Bluth had, in fact, been the director, or like had handled the animation for the film. That's not to say it would have had a completely different direction or a completely different, like, feel to it, but maybe, just maybe, with a little Don Bluth dazzle, it could have been a little more than it was, or maybe a little more like American Tale, which was very dark and gritty and stuff. And that's not to say that Fievel Goes West doesn't have its, like, kind of dark themes to it, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but it's interesting. But anyway, Beauty and the Beast...
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Beauty and the Beast.
Right. How, at that point in time, you really, I mean, looking back, obviously, all of us are like, yeah, you can't compete at, you know, the only animated film to ever be nominated for Best Picture all around. So yeah. That's...
It's got some weird connections to Beauty and the Beast, though.
Really?
Well, you got John Cleese. John Cleese, howdy, y'all. He was the voice of Cat Erwal, the villain of the film. He actually turned down the chance to voice Cogsworth in Beauty and the Beast for this role. So I was like...
Oh, no.
But that's all right. You know what?
It's
I don't know if
coin.
I would have liked John Cleese. I don't know if I would have liked John Cleese as Cogsworth.
Yeah, I don't think I would have. But then again, it's like...
I don't know if I would have.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, I did also notice another interesting connection that it had was at the very end. It's got the dream to dream, da 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 da, that song.
Obligatory. Some sort of celebrity or pop singer has to sing one of the songs.
Right, of course. And so it was originally recorded by Miss Celine Dion.
Oh.
Who was very, like, nobody knew her at that time. One of her biggest things was when she went on to actually sing the theme for Beauty and the Beast. So they ended up, the producers ended up favoring Linda Ronstadt, who sang the theme song of Somewhere Out There in the original American Tale, over Miss Celine Dion. So I thought that was
all sorts of weird
connection.
Stuff happening. It's really interesting because Steven Spielberg is such an iconic director of live action films, and this whole era of Amblimation was just so kind of kooky. You know, they were just kind of feeling things out. It seemed, and I felt like production or like producing wise, they made a lot of weird decisions, like the whole Celine Dion thing. You know,
I get behind that.
I don't know. It's interesting because, like, a lot of their films never really resonated with me. Like, I was never a kid who sat at home watching Amblimation films. I was strictly a Disney kid. Except when Shrek came along and then DreamWorks started encroaching on old Disney. And, of course, you know, Pixar. But my VHS adventures were always, VHS viewings were always Disney. And I think we had Land Before Time, and that was it. And that's Don Bluth, obviously, not.
Yeah,
not Amblimation.
I did both. Yeah. I did both. I was very much.
You were a true balanced animation addict.
Of a Don Bluth, and I was just all around. I just really liked it all, and the fact that this one had some fun songs, I was pretty happy about.
Yeah, so. It's got fun songs. It's got a whole part of it that's really fun.
While we're on the subject of songs, the song "Dream to Dream." It was written by James Horner, who I absolutely love and adore, and may he rest in peace. Oh my gosh, sad face all the day. And it was also produced by David Foster, who, can I just say, is like amazing, which I'm sure it was why Celine Dion was the original singer for it, because David Foster was the one who produced her as well. Like, he's just a genius. He's done Michael Bublé and like a whole bunch of other people too. Josh Groban. Yeah. So if you see David Foster's name on anything, you know, it's going to be good.
Yeah. He's got a ton of credits. Like, I'm just browsing through his IMDb cause I don't know anything about music, but yeah, cool. David Foster, huh?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so
I don't remember a lot of this film.
Remember a lot of the film prior to watching it or right now?
No, I don't remember anything about American Tale. Actually, I think we did that within the last year and a half, and I forgot all about it. It's like, what, they're trying to get to America's, like, a ship, and there's, like, a thing, and then there's, like, cats, and then all I remember is the lady who's like, release the secret weapon! And I forget what happens. But basically, they're in America, right? And they're supposed to be living the American dream. But they're not. They're, like, unsatisfied.
Yeah, so they've lived the American dream as far as, like, they've come to America and they're living in New York, and now they've seen things that aren't the way that they thought they should be.
They've seen things, man.
And so at that point in time, there's also a coup going on. The cats, for some reason, want to force them over west. So apparently that's the main reason for the manifest destiny. All the cats are actually, you know, terrorizing all the mice, and they're like, oh, let's go out west, because we out west. Da, 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 da. It's a good one.
Yep. They spent a lot of the first film saying there are no cats in America. Well, they were wrong. There definitely are cats in America, and they attack them like every day, apparently.
Right.
And also, it's really interesting. Can I just talk about my least favorite character in the film, and that is Papa Mouskowitz?
Okay, why?
He is the biggest loser. The film opens up with him complaining, what happened? America was supposed to be the land of opportunity. And I'm like, get a new job. Like, okay, did you notice that he was a tailor in the first movie, and now he's a violin maker in this movie? And then he starts complaining that no one wants violins. Well, it's like, I don't know, man. Like, the basic tenets of capitalism, you got to find the people that are going to buy your product. Then you have to have a really good product. So what he's not experiencing, like betrayal by the American dream. He's experiencing the American dream. He just has to make this the next step and move on and make something else with his life. You know, people start over all the time. So I wish that Papa Mouskovitz could have reinvented himself and learned that that's all part of the process of, you know, producing your own wealth and being successful in America. But that's all right. He's a new guy, you know, and he catches on to the fact that there's opportunity in the West, which there is, mostly in Texas, but also in the West. But yeah, he is so dim-witted. Like, it is so incredibly, because this is very much a kid's film. Let's get that straight first off. Like, right. Mouseburgers, the fact that nobody gets killed, they just get disarmed in a very dramatic way. It's geared towards kids, and so it's painfully obvious what the cats want to do with the mice. But the whole time, Papa Mouskovitz is like, "Oh no, we can trust these cats," you know. And it's like, "No, the cats are going to make this mouse trap." "Oh, you have a big imagination, Fiver." You know, it's like, "No. I've got this recording on my phone of the cats of the cats laying out their dastardly plan." "Oh well, I'm sure he means best. Maybe mouse burgers are a figure of speech." I don't know what I'm talking like.
Why are we talking from Sesame Transylvania?
Sorry, my Russian, my Papa Mouskovitz voice isn't what it should be, I guess. But it's just so incredibly dim-witted. It's like at the end they make these bleachers that are basically half of a mousetrap, and they're sitting and staring directly in front of them is the business end of a mousetrap. And some guy's like, "Hey, Papa Mouskovitz, doesn't it look like we're in a giant mousetrap?" "Oh no, I trust these cats. They are not going to hurt us." With his violin. God, Papa is so dense. I am so glad that Fievel was like, "I'm out of here." But not really. He gets kind of conned into falling off the train, but you gotta hand it to them. They are resilient for living in the slums of New York City and dealing with cat attacks every day. And so, naturally, they are going to seek after these tickets to go west. And that's where John Cleese's character, Cat-er-Wall, get it, arrives on the scene. So many cat puns.
There's so many puns in this that just makes me actually really happy.
Cat-er-Wall. Tarantula. Come on.
Which one?
Tarantula.
Ah, yes.
The dumb spider. Oh my gosh, yes. A spider.
Wiley Burp was actually my favorite. Who was Wiley supposed Burp. To be Wyatt Earp.
Wyatt Earp, man. dang old James Stewart.
Oh my gosh. James
I love him.
Stewart.
He's so old. He was so old when he did this film.
This was his last film.
And you could hear him, man. He's inches away from death. Lord bless and keep him. But he did a great job. And I remember that iconic scene, that daydream that Fievel is having, which brings me to this point that I wanted to make, is that this film is zany with its animation. Z-A-N-Y. Like, lots of like 3D effects without necessarily doing CG, coconut gun, but any Donkey Kong fans in the house? Anyway, where like the camera like revolves and pans around the characters, and that one scene of Wiley Burp staring down all the cat gang, and the autofocus on my camera is like, whoa. And the camera goes all the way around him, and you get to see all these angles and stuff. Like, it's pretty good. I don't know if I could do something
like that. I would
like
say
that.
So.
It's hard for me to draw things that aren't, like, from a profile.
Right. Well, the moment when Fievel falls down, like, jumps down and is, like, looking up. You're looking at Fievel at his angle, but then looking up toward Wiley Burp. I've always thought that was a really cool shot.
Yeah, and of course there's a lot of help from like rotoscoped objects, like live action rotoscoped stuff, to kind of get the layouts of the environments down. But there's a lot of scenes like when they're in the sewers and they're going on that kind of roller coaster ride, and the camera is like right on them and following them down and stuff. pretty good. And then all that train stuff is really good. And then so many shots where they're just, because mice, they're 3D animals in the cartoon world. They climb on walls. They're up in the rafters. They're climbing through holes. And so the camera work and the animation work is really supports that. And you got to give them props to that. It's not necessarily something that Disney didn't do. It was just, I don't know. It reminded me of Great Mouse Detective, maybe. Something like that in those action sequences. It's a cool thing to do in 2D animation where you can take the view of the camera to places that a normal video camera couldn't go to. And right. Pulling that off in a 2D environment or in a 2D production, it takes talent and time.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, Cat R. Wall.
Well, so there's that one part where you have the, like, he's the puppet mouse. And he's coming in and he's like, y'all.
Y'all.
I can have really deep appreciation for this y'all.
I was watching that and I was like, he ain't from the West. You know?
Oh, the Italian mouse is right there. And he's like, oh, I'll take a 15.
It's a me. So, Cat R. Wall, he is the quintessential Wild West twirly mustache gentleman villain.
Yeah.
And you know who he has a lot of similarities with? And I want to open this up to chat if there's even people still watching this. who would win? Okay, first of all, I'll present who I think he's very similar to, is Professor Rattigan from The Great Mouse Detective. Hear me out. They both have like an army. They have like a gang surrounding them, and they both seem to be smarter than everyone else in their gang. And they both have annoying, creepy henchmen. They have that one henchman.
It's true.
Who is beyond creepy. So you had Fidget, who was running around with Rattigan in The Great Mouse Detective. Now you've got Chula, who is the spider dude with the horrible smile, terrible teeth. Spiders don't even have teeth. Who runs around with Cat R. Wall. And it's like, and they're both kind of dim-witted, you know, but they're the muscle and they're the intimidation factor in the gang. So who would win in a fight? Like, if the two dastardly D's decide to dastardly defeat each other, who would win? Who do you think has got the smarts, the brains, the gadgets, you know, the resources to defeat the other person? And keep in mind that Cat R. Wall is a cat and Professor Rattigan is a rat.
This is true. You know, I think that Rattigan would still win.
Rattigan would still win. Okay, I want to hear your reasoning. Let's turn this into a mini nerdy couch discussion. So okay. Just a tiny couch. Just one seat cushion each.
Okay, sounds good.
You get one.
So the reasons why I think that Rattigan would still
Mega
win.
Evolution Rattigan.
The Jacob reason why I think that he would still win would be because you look at Cat R. Wall and all he does is he gets other people to do his deeds for him. For example, the reason why they don't go ahead and eat the mice in the first place is because that if they did that, then nobody would build their stuff for them. So in that way, he's the one that's just kind of like, he's getting everybody else. He's definitely the brain, not the brawn of this. And I just don't feel like he has the inner monster inside of him.
The inner monster. Actually, he's got a soft spot for Tanya.
He does.
Right?
He's got the soft spot for the diva. And for I think the diva. That I stop. You'll crush the diva.
You'll crush the diva. I love that line. I want to use it as much as I can.
Please do. I think the reason why though is like you look at our Mr. Rattigan and you see that he does a lot of things on his own. He's smart enough to do everything on his own, and yet he still does have henchmen to do things for him. But he's also got that inner beast in him. Like he goes all feral at the very end, and he's
at the end
crazy.
There he evolves into Raticate and tries to do Hyper Fang on everyone.
Exactly.
Is there a mega evolution for Raticate?
Ladies and gentlemen,
what are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros. Good job.
I don't know. Someone
no,
in the
there's
chat
not.
Will correct me.
Oh, okay. As a well, according to Pokemon Go, there's not.
Well, Pokemon Go's only generation one. Let's see. Mega Evolution Raticate. Raticate. That's what I call him because Spanish. There's a YouTube video. What if there was a Mega Raticate? That'd be so cool. Anyway, so it seems to me like you're comparing the evil plans of the two villains. So Radigan, he wants to build a robot queen.
Right.
Use her for political power. Hijack the entire British mice government, critter government in Great Britain in the UK with a robot. And it's a very convincing robot. I mean, let's just put that out there. Meanwhile, Caterwaul just wants to exploit the labor of these poor immigrants, and then he wants to kill them all in some mass genocide thing and make mouse burgers. Mouse burgers? That's so lame.
Mouse
what about
burgers.
Mouse enchiladas? Mouse tacos? Like, we're in the West, y'all. Y'all.
We're gone out West.
The spirit of the West. Oh, man. I should start making Rango references. What's your matter? I love Rango. We need to do a Rango Revisited episode. We need to go back and do another episode for Rango. Rango Part 2, because Mason still has stuff to say about it. Okay, so looking at the chat here, we've got Esther who says, Radigan. Radigan, hands down. Radigan is actually trying to contain his inner monster, and it is quite terrifying when it comes out. And Radigan has a much bigger picture in mind. Usurping the queen to rule the British Empire is pretty cunning. Caterwaul would get his eyes clawed out by Radigan. Radigan used Hyper Fang. Super effective. Or it'd be a critical hit.
No, I'm pretty down with what she said. I believe that's exactly what would happen. He's got too much inner monster so that he just can't. He would just go crazy.
Yeah. So what do we got? Jacobs06, Turquoise Comet, Cassidy Wang. Pretty much everyone in the chat says hands down that Radigan would win. Plus, he is voiced by Vincent Price. Yeah, the illustrious.
Yeah, there's really no beating that. I mean, James Stewart is pretty cool, but he's not the one we're comparing him to. So,
as far as
voice actors go.
You dirty rat, you. I love James Stewart. I mean, this ain't no Mr. Krueger's Christmas, am I right? I mean, he's an old dude in this one. So anyway, Caterwaul. Okay, so the Roto Nation has decided that in a fight between Caterwaul and Professor Radigan. Plus, Radigan is such a cool name. Plus, he's a professor. Like, that's so mysterious. Like, how did he go from being a professor to an evil?
It's true.
An evil guy. Is Moriarty a professor? Is he an academic in the Sherlock Holmes lore?
I have no idea.
I don't know. Because I feel like Radigan is like the Moriarty of this.
Right.
Rats Down Under. What's it called? The Great Mouse Detective.
Rats Down Under.
Rats Down Under. Anyway, who's better though, Fidget or Chula? I like Chula's name
Fidget.
A little bit better because it sounds like Chola. Bring in Chola.
Yeah, no, Fidget. I'm gonna say is definitely. Although, I mean,
I'm gonna slit your throat. I'm just kidding.
See, the thing is, like, I don't really like to compare this movie to really anything because.
Okay, we won't.
Like,
compare.
It's just, well, the thing is, like, I know it's going to lose, but I still like it.
So, you know what one of my favorite exchanges in this movie is?
What's that?
It's when Tanya goes, "Look, Mama, a singer and an actor." She's like, "Tanya, stop that. You shouldn't stare at people less fortunate than yourself." Preach, Mama.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Yes.
I love it. Such truth. There's a reason why everyone's pushing STEM. But anyway, we do have a singer on air today. So
yes. No, then that's one of the other reasons why I find this so funny.
Because you identify with so much.
I identify so much.
When Chelsea was picked up by a savage cat and put in a vaudeville music show. Forced to be a hoochie mama. And,
oh, man.
I mean, that's just what all singers
Who's the girl you left
behind?
Da, 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 da. I love this movie so much.
Can we just skip to that? Can we just skip to that part of the movie? Because that is like my favorite part of the movie. For some reason, the movie just is like, okay, forget about Fievel. Forget about whatever Tiger is doing for the whole movie. And check this out. Like, it's awesome. Like, okay, for one thing, got to look at all sides of the coin here, which two sides. So Kat Arwal is a softie. Because he is going to kill Fievel and whatever, and he's going to kill the mice. But he spares one mouse. And he has a soft spot for Tanya because of her amazing voice. And what happened to her voice from the beginning of the film to this part of the film? Like, 30 minutes ago, people were throwing crap at her. Seeing maybe they'll throw more food. Papa's got the system down. No respect.
When you're out in the frontier, I mean, they dig that more. I'll just leave it at that. They do.
Okay. So I love it when a villain has a soft spot or has a weakness that wants to push them over to the good side, but they resist it. Like, I think that is a very good treatment of how a villain can be interesting or appealing. Although there are really appealing and really interesting villains that aren't redeemable, but it's interesting to get that tiny glimpse of light. You know, what I don't like about the film and what's weak about American Tail 2 is that Kat Arwal doesn't do anything with his soft spot for Tanya. He doesn't rethink his plan. He doesn't have a conflict of like conscience or anything. He doesn't have like an inner struggle. The only thing he really cares about is saving her so that they can be successful at their bar. You know, you'll crush the diva.
You don't want to crush the talent there.
But Kat Arwal does not have a heart. He's very much a exploiter. He is very much an opportunist. I don't like to say businessman because I hate it how animated films are always bashing on businessmen. And
that's true.
As a wannabe entrepreneur myself, I am constantly being disappointed by Hollywood and the animation industry's treatment of capitalism and capitalists. But whatever, I digress. Animation is also all about generalizing and all about stereotypes. Like, right. Let's be honest here. So, of course, the bad guy is going to be this, like, businessman who's... And don't get me wrong, I don't agree with Kat Arwal, like deceiving these poor immigrants and, like, making them labor. And then he's going to kill them all to, like, you know, whatever. Of course, I'm not endorsing that. I just... Whatever. But anyway, it's interesting. He has a soft spot, but he doesn't really do anything about it relative to the mice. But Tanya's little transformation and this like little moment where she thinks that it's interesting because the movie could have really gone the jealousy route with Miss Kitty, but instead Miss Kitty actually turned out to be a really cool person.
Oh yeah, Miss Kitty was awesome.
Yeah, she's cool. All, like
she's
could
like
have been
the
jealous
mentor.
One.
She's the mentor, and she says that she's like, "Don't forget, honey, it's what's under the mask." Yeah. I love her accent. It's so great.
A mouse. She's kind of the mentor, like you said, and she kind of teaches her the ways and kind of gives her a pep talk, you know?
Right.
And then Tanya has her big moment. And all of a sudden, this movie that's all about a young wannabe cowboy finding his family and killing the bad guy, it just halts and it turns into this moment, this metamorphosis for Tanya.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And it, the feels, man, the feels come out because she nails it. And all those cats are under her spell. There's that shot where she's on the stage and they're like, ooh. You know, there's like 50 of them, you know, instantly entranced. And
we'll find the girl tonight. He's like, all right, yeah.
Yeah, they love her.
And then Fievel comes up. Tanya, we gotta go.
Fievel kind of ruins
stay.
it.
My public needs me.
My public needs me.
I love it.
Yep, she's gone full Hoochie Mama. just like Minnie Mouse when she first started out.
Oh man.
It's pretty interesting. Actually, Fievel kind of ruined it. Like all he had to do was just wait for her to go home for the day, you know. But he also didn't know that Catterwall was probably going to spare her from the mass genocide.
Yeah, and probably not.
I had forgotten. I was like, does Miss Kitty know about the giant mousetrap and the mouse burgers? Is she going to tell Tanya about this? But she didn't know either. She was another innocent player, another innocent victim in the scheme.
Of course, it's always the talented ones that are the innocent.
Yeah. So what are some other memorable moments? Oh, we got to talk about Tiger. We have to talk about Tiger.
Oh, man, yes.
Tiger is even better in this film. Like, he's amazing.
He was pretty awesome in this film. I think one of my favorite parts is right after he has been dubbed the Tiger God, I love how when it's just him, he just ends up still talking to the camera and, like, joking around with you, the audience, as the camera.
Yeah, those are Greek asides, I believe you call them. Beggar's Opera in freshman year in high school, we had a lot of asides. But anyway, Tiger's character arc is pretty kooky, and I like how he actually turned out to be a major player at the end. Like, yeah. apparently he was the guy that they needed to train to be a dog, not Fievel. Like, Fievel is just a bystander. He's like Mad Max, and Tiger is Furiosa.
Like, yeah, this really isn't Fievel's story.
It's very interesting how they It isn't Fievel's story. Fievel messes a lot of things up, actually.
He's the one that kind of progresses the
pest.
Plot along, but it's not his story.
Would you say he keeps the plot rolling, rolling, rolling? Keep that plot point rolling.
Rawhide.
Yeah, apparently that was the version sung in the Blues Brothers, and Steven Spielberg's voice is actually in it. And
what?
So that version, that song, Rawhide, is the version that Dan Aykroyd and the other guy sang in Blues Brothers. Was it Blues Brothers?
Funny.
Or am I totally tripping?
No, yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh, that's great.
And Steven Spielberg actually lent his voice a little bit to that recording. I don't know which one is his voice. You'd have to kind of probably look it up.
That's a little known fact right there.
That is a little known fact that you can just look up on Wikipedia or IMDb. But yeah, oh yeah, don't get me wrong, folks. We do our homework. We don't just know these things. So anyway, I love Tiger's story arc, but was I the only one who was a little freaked out when I was in kindergarten and I saw when the moonlight hits the face of the grinning stone monument? It's really creepy. I thought it was really creepy. It's this, like, creepy grinning face, and I was not prepared for it when I was a kindergartner. And then I remember the little chief popping out. Poof, you know, very, yeah. some nice squash and stretch there. One of the principles of animation. And
thank you.
And it's kind of like I also remember in kindergarten the squaw coming up and thinking about how she's going to use his tail for a fur coat. He's like, ma'am, that's still attached to me. And I just think that Dom DeLuise does such a great job with, like, kind of the blubbering kind of weakling fool guy. Like, he's the guy who's trying to fast talk his way out of everything, you know? And he's got the you know how Dom DeLuise does it? You know what I'm talking about. I liked his role as Kusamagoopa Goop in Dexter's Laboratory. That was one of my favorites. Chelsea, if you got something to say, you gotta unmute that mic. Maybe I lost her. Alright. I'll just keep talking. I ain't scared. I thought it was really funny how the little native mice, they are totally not afraid of the hawk, and they'll just attack it head on. Oh my gosh, that's like the best part of the film, because Chelsea just left the broadcast. Oh no. We're going to wait a little while for Chelsea to get back on the broadcast. Again, Chelsea is in Iguazu Falls in South America. That's literally the middle of the jungle. Trust me, I've been there. And so you can't expect the Wi-Fi to be as pristine as it is here in Aggieland. So anyway, I really love that they totally attack the hawk, and then, like, moments later they're bringing in, like, a cooked bird on a dish. It's like, they got the hawk. Anyway. Whew. Man, I there's nothing to talk about without Chelsea. Let's see. I think it's really interesting because a lot of the artwork looks very unrefined with the animation, like some of the cell work. Maybe it just shows its age and like the digital copy that I watched or whatever. But I really like all the background paintings and all the stuff. Like you can see that one that one rock formation in Monument Valley out in Utah, like in every shot they like to put it in there. Let's see. All right, who wants to hear me do an impersonation of Wiley Burp, huh? Anybody in the chat want me to do some James Stewart? I'm going to try to do my best. Let's see. He's got a lot of great monologues in the film. I like the one where Fievel first meets him and he's like sleeping. I like that Wiley Burp is just sleeping the whole time. He's like sleeping the whole movie. And it takes him forever to wake up. So anyway, let's see. See if I can do some James Stewart here. Let the sleeping dog lie, son. Doggone it, I'm dog tired. I'm screwing it up. He's like, I'm tired of leading the dogs laughing, fighting like cats and dogs against cats and dogs. Young pups a dog in my trail tried to become the top dog. I don't know. Maybe that's a little too much Western flair. But I like how they have this monologue with Wiley Burp, and he basically has, like, I don't know, this is the one monologue that has, like, 50 dog puns in the course of, like, 30 seconds. It's amazing. I don't know, if I revert back to my one line that I know really well from James Stewart, where he's like, you dirty rat, you, where he's like, I'm going to the dogs in a dog-eat-dog world, son. I'm far over the hill. I'm on the bottom of the other side. Something like that. I don't know. James Stewart was pretty good and got that iconic voice. So I love how Tiger is such a diva when Wiley Burp is training him to be a dog. For one, I don't know why Fievel can't be the dog. Like, what's wrong with Fievel being the dog? What's wrong with him being, you know, the little sheriff's deputy? Then Wiley Burp could be like... Mason should solo Little Mermaid 2 and Cinderella 2. Yeah, I really should. but anyway, I digress. See, I go all over the place when you just... Like, I'm literally on the podcast just talking to myself, guys. This is hard for me when I'm left alone and I don't have Chelsea and Morgan to bounce off of. So y'all just bear with me and be patient for me. So anyway, Tiger is such a diva. Like, he's used to being a god. You know, I like Fievel's line, anyone can be a god, but not everyone. It takes someone special to be a dog. I'm like, huh? But anyway, this is a very kooky film. It's not to be taken seriously. So anyway, Tiger is really a diva when Wiley Burp is training him. You know, he's got, you know, I don't have to do this. But Wiley Burp, he really ups the intensity. Like, he really wants him to learn how to be a good dog. And, I also remember from the previews for this film, because I've seen the preview for or the trailer for Fievel Goes West like several times, and one thing I remember is the lazy eye.
Hey,
I love it. Whoa, Chelsea's back, everybody.
I am so sorry. We reset the internet here, so hopefully we'll be better.
Chelsea reset the internet. She called Brazil and was like, hey, Batos, reset the internet for all of Brazil. We're doing the podcast here.
We got important things to do here.
We're doing the Fievel Goes West episode. Come on, reset the internet. I was just talking about the lazy eye. And I tried to do one of Wiley Burp's soliloquies as James Stewart, but I don't know. My James Stewart is too weak.
The let sleeping dogs lie one?
Let the sleeping dog lie, son.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
How many dog puns can you fit into one monologue?
That was the...
Those writers had a real heyday.
Yeah, they really did. Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah, the lazy eye part.
I bet they had a lot of fun with it. I bet they were dog tired.
You should have been in on that one.
So anyway, the training montage. We've got the lazy eye.
Right.
And as a Southerner and as someone who spent time in the West, I have no idea what the lazy eye is and why it has this power over your enemies. So we're just going to drink the Kool-Aid and move on. But nothing like playing a little Copland, or is it Copland or Copland? You know, the Beef It's What's For Dinner song. Y'all don't even remember that. Y'all remember that? Beef It's What's For Dinner.
Yes, I do. I mean, no, I'm not that old.
Is that Copland or Copeland?
I have no idea, actually.
Who cares? I'm reading this from a script. nothing like like a training montage with like super Wild West music and stuff. And in the end, Tiger turns into the dog. It's pretty great. And he's getting pretty much into it, but he's a real softy. So I love a good standoff, Mexican or otherwise. And I love a good Western. No, a Mexican standoff. You know what that is, right?
Yeah.
Mexican standoff is where the three people have the guns. And so you have one gun trained on each person.
Uh-huh.
And you don't know what's going to happen. You know?
Who's going to go first?
You could
first?
Catch someone monologuing. I don't know. Mm. There's the most famous one is in The Good and Bad, the Ugly with Clint Eastwood. So anyway, the final battle is pretty good, actually. I love how this film is... It works. The animators worked very hard to not have any actual killings. There's only one firearm in the whole movie.
Really?
Fully functioning firearm that's not in a fantasy sequence. Yeah, and that's the one. That's the giant one, the human-sized one that Catterwall has at the end.
Huh.
He's got it on a swivel, man. He's just got a Colt single action or something, or like a 32 or something. And 38. Everyone else has like little pop guns, like in the VHS cover.
Yeah.
Or they have a slingshot, and I'm like, props to Rango for having actual firearms. Come on.
Well, and, these are animals making these, so it's not like they.
Yeah. it's rated G, so we gotta keep the gun violence down. Unfortunately, but it's still pretty entertaining because he's got that slingshot and he's deadly accurate with it. Until the little tiny cat shows up with like the Gatling gun slingshot and stuff. And then the only thing left to do is do the lazy eye. And it definitely psyched him out, you know?
Well,
and,
it's kind of like in... It's like in the Panda movies where he's got his skadoosh.
Oh, Kung Fu Panda? Yeah. Oh, that's his skadoosh.
Yeah, so the lazy eye was the skadoosh. Original skadoosh.
Yeah, yeah. That's a pretty good reference there, yeah. That's a good connection. So my favorite part, and probably the best thing to watch, is when Tiger sees that Miss Kitty is in danger, and then he goes totally KO Ken on everyone. he goes straight to Super Saiyan level 3, and it's pretty amazing to watch. I love it. And you know where this film could have gone? The route it could have gone? It could have, like, had the cats be afraid of Tiger at first, and then they realize that he's a dog. He's not a dog. That he's actually a cat, like his ears shrink back, you know, or something like that, or whatever. And then Miss Kitty could be like, "You lied to me? You're not a real dog."
Who's that dog?
Yeah, and then Tiger would be exiled, and then he would have to meet the Spirit of the West, who tells him, nowadays they've got a name for just about everything. Doesn't matter what they called you. It's the deeds make the dog.
I have no
That's
idea
what they should do with it.
Is that a Rango
It's
reference?
From Rango. It's the end of Rango. It's my favorite part of Rango, where Rango meets the Spirit of the West, and it's just Clint Eastwood, voiced by that one guy from Longmire.
Mason, you Timothy realize Oli the Funk. Last time I watched Rango was 4 years ago. Episode
Holy
3.
Cow. The lack of appreciation for one of the greatest animated films of all time here.
Oh my
Let's
gosh.
Hear it for Rango! Anyway. So... I like it. I like it. And then at the end, it's really interesting because Fievel, he gets to be the deputy, right? He gets to be Wiley Burp's deputy. But maybe he's the new Wiley Burp, because Wiley Burp, he's ready to head for the hills. You know, he's ready to go out to pasture, if you will. He's getting long in the tooth, to quote Billy Joe Shaver.
Just and, remember, one man's sunset is another man's dawn.
One man's sunset is another man's dawn. I don't know what's out there beyond those hills, but if you ride yonder, head up, eyes steady, heart open, think that one day you'll find that you're the hero you've been looking for. The feels, folks.
The feels. He does such a good job delivering every one of his little soliloquies. I'm just like, oh, man.
I wish Jimmy you're Stewart good. Would have done more cowboy, more Western roles.
I think he would have done a fantastic job at it.
But he got one in, you know, the most important one, Wiley Burt, the role of the century. So. All right, which one do we like better, American Tail 1 or American Tail 2, Fievel Goes West? I want to hear what the chat people say. There's still people watching, right? Yeah, we've got 10 viewers. We're good.
Sweet. I'm going to say definitely I love Fievel Goes West number two, the best. I thought that the storyline of this one was a lot more seamlined. It actually...
Really?
Seamless
or streamlined? Because
streamlined.
Seamlined is a kind of a cool word. It's like streamlined and seamless all in one word.
Yeah, well, the longer I'm in Brazil, the less I know either language. So,
honey, don't even get me started.
So, I think it's a lot more streamlined. I feel like each one of the characters, the character arcs were a lot more defined for a lot of them. And I feel like there's just a lot of so many funny little things, and I feel like the songs were better. So. So I think that's why I like Fievel Goes West more.
Wow. So Chelsea likes Fievel Goes West. Let's see. Turquoise comment. The first, it's a classic. Matthew Latham, number one. Cassidy Wang, number one. Jeremiah, well, there's basically no story in the first one. So, I mean, there is, but no one plot thread lasts longer than 10 minutes. Boy, if that isn't true.
That's very
true. So instead, we've got like three 30-minute or three 25-minute or three 20-minute plot lines. Okay, so that's interesting. I personally like Fievel Goes West better because guns and because Wild West and because cowboys. And you put all those three together and you've basically got 310 to Yuma, which is one of my favorite films. And anyway, there's actually very little gunplay in this movie. Rated G for slingshot violence.
Rated S.
We got a roto confession here.
Okay.
I don't think we've ever told you guys about this, but we once got severe hate mail, like a severe, like very angry, hateful voicemail from someone that we never aired it. Cause it was just bashing us and it very insulting to us. And, we decided not to air it, but the guy basically ranted about how we rate the films on the podcast. And he was like, you gave, what was it? You gave Nightmare Before Christmas a 3.5 out of 5 stars, but you gave Goofy Movie a 5-star rating akin to Gone with the Wind. You gave it a 5-star rating. And he bashed us so hard for that. And I wanted to be like, bro, like, this is where the points don't matter. What's that one show? Whose Line Is It Anyway? We don't take our ratings seriously, and they're very subjective. That's the point of ratings. And also, like, we definitely go the nostalgia route for the ones that we're the most nostalgic about, you know?
Yeah. No,
we're not critics. I don't pretend to be analytical at all. But, the guy was like, 'tis blasphemy. Got really offended that... I think it was Morgan who rated it 5 stars. Just because you and Chelsea grew up with it, you know? It was a big part of your childhood. Who cares? Yeah. You know, but anyway, we'll get into the ratings in a second, but I enjoyed Fievel Goes West because of the simple things like I love Don Bluth and I love his stuff. And, I'm rooting for him on, freaking Dragon's Lair. I got my, I did my payment to their Kickstarter. And so I got this sweet, Dragon's Lair autographed postcard.
Sweet.
And I got my autographed cell from Secret of NIMH.
Oh,
with
awesome.
Read and Weep, Gary Goldman and Don Bluth. Did I get them twisted? Yeah. Okay. Gary Goldman over here, Don Bluth over here. And I've got this very awkward, very heartbreaking pose from Mrs. Nimsby and and whoever that fool is. What's his name? But anyway, I am the proud owner of these relics. And so I love Don Bluth, but Fievel Goes West is just better in my opinion.
Oh, I love it. Yes, for sure. Yeah,
compared to American Tail 1, I can barely get through American Tail.
Yeah, well, I also am a huge, huge supporter of Mr. Bluth. I will be receiving my All Dogs Go to Heaven cell at any day, I'm sure. So I'm super excited about that. But I do like this one better just because it does feel a lot more streamlined. It does feel a lot more...
Seamlined. Was it seamlined or streamless? Streamless describes you right now with your crappy internet.
Right.
Seamlined is... I like seamlined. I'm going to start using it now. Because in visualization, we use words like streamlined and seamless and synergy all the time, so...
So anyway, that's why I liked this movie more than the original. And then once again, I am a sucker for the songs. And the songs were really great in the first. I just felt like they put it up a notch. And there's a lot more that I can sing in this one. So there.
Yeah.
As far as overall ratings go, I could just go with my gut of not with necessarily my gut, but like with my total nostalgia, I can give it a 4 stars for the just on nostalgia ratings. I mean looking at it as like a film all in all, it's going to be about a 3-ish on like if you're going to be the critic type. But as far as like overall enjoyment, I still get a 4-star value out of this, I would say.
What would I give 5 Will Goes West? I don't know. I'll give it 2.5 out of 5 stars. It's not that great.
No, it's not.
But I like it more than American Tail. I wonder what I rated. I wonder if anyone knows what I rated American Tail 1.
It would take work to go back.
it would, and I don't.
And we're live. We're moving forward.
We'll do it live. 2.5 stars for me.
Cool. All right, let's move on to voicemails.
Ooh, voicemails. Do you want me to play them, Chelsea? I am prepared this time.
Woohoo!
I've got
my
tablet here.
I'm excited,
and
yes.
And my audio cable.
We do have quite a few voicemails that came in.
So we got a lot of Roto veterans calling in today. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And we've got a new one at the end, someone I've never heard before. So this first one is from Brandon with a question about Kubo.
Hello, this is Brandon Smith. Back again with another voicemail and an actual question this time. I guess you can call this a bit of a touchy subject. Kubo and the Two Strings has been getting, let's call it criticism in some circles, for having a very talented but mostly white voice cast play Japanese characters or characters that could be read as Japanese. I want to get your thoughts on that because voice acting is a very different thing from actual acting. You know, you're not in front of a camera, you're in front of a microphone, and you're using your voice to bring a certain character to life. In that area, the argument of whether or not a voice actor should be the same race or ethnicity as the character they're playing, that can be kind of a gray area, so I want to get your thoughts on that. That's it. Once again, I'll see you later.
Thank you, Brandon.
All right, what's your take on it?
So my take originally and still is I don't care. I don't think that it's really that big of a deal, honestly, because I think about it like, okay, if I am doing as a voice actor, I should be able to close my eyes and think of a character. Now, if that means that this character has an accent, then that character should have an accent. But if that means, if it doesn't necessarily require an accent, then I don't care. As long as I'm able to look at a character and think this is what that character is and whatnot, then I feel like it's fine. Because if you look, this was actually a comment that was put on the Rotoscopers Facebook page a couple days ago that said, one comment I really liked, it said, hey, it's going to get dubbed anyway. You know, when it goes to Japan, it'll get dubbed by
a
Japanese.
Oh, and it's localization.
Yeah. And so anywhere it goes, it's going to get dubbed in that. So I think it's made too much of a deal. And yes, I understand that people can feel like actually, no, it's just because I have this friend and this friend and whatever. It's Hollywood people. I mean, where else are you going to find a place where it's okay to say, actually, no, you're too fat for this role? I mean, that's just what it is. So
unless you're in a sorority. Yeah.
I don't. yeah.
Which I can joke about because Shanna was in a sorority. So I'm
okay.
good.
you're good. that's my long-winded, short-winded phrase. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, I second that. I really don't care. In a perfect world, people would not be so offended at everything.
It's true.
But here's the ugly truth that everyone seems to forget about Hollywood. Hollywood is a very dirty business, and they work off of stereotypes. Uh-huh. They work off of generalizations.
Uh-huh.
And their success is driven by the art form and the star power.
Yes.
And sometimes you have to put the star power in. Memoirs of a Geisha. Did anyone see that?
I did.
So Memoirs of a Geisha is about Japanese culture, and all the main characters were played by Chinese actresses. That I would have a problem with, because it's kind of like a movie about a samurai, but having an American actor as a samurai. Oh, wait, we did that too. So it happens all the time, and there are instances when, yes, I do think it's kind of inappropriate, but for animation, the localization will always have local actors, and sometimes they are the celebrities of that realm that they are being translated, where the localization is being made. So what's the problem? And it's interesting because when I did my 100 voices for animation impersonations video, and I made a joke at the end, which wasn't even an original joke. It was that one dude from BYU who was a comedian for like 2 seconds. his joke about, it's so weird that Aladdin is Arab. He's from Arabia, but he has the voice of like a white guy from California, you know? And when his voice should really sound like this. And I got a lot of flack, and I was actually called racist on that YouTube video for trying to project an Arab voice onto Aladdin. And so it's like, will people be satisfied either way? The point, I think that people will just get offended no matter what. So long story short, I don't care either. I do think in some instances, like Memoirs of a Geisha, it is culturally insensitive to do so. But I think in animation, like Chelsea said, it's about the character, and it should be about the character, not the celebrity behind it. But Sing is coming out, so I don't really know what to do there.
Oh my gosh. Well, no.
When you have animals, it's fair game.
Yeah.
Heck cares? But Kubo had actual human characters.
And I can see a lot of people going back and forth on your argument here, saying, well, actually, you know, these were Japanese culture, so that is insensitive. And I get that. But once again, for me, I mean, you're only going to be hearing the voice anyway. For the longest time, you didn't know what any of us looked like. Before we had the YouTube channel and that was like a year after we had, it was like a year after we started the podcast, nobody had any idea what we looked like at all. And then it was like, once there, it was like, oh my gosh, I had no idea what you looked like. Well, yeah, I wouldn't expect you to.
It's all about the voice, but now it's all about the mug.
It's all about Mason's mug. At that point in time, you project whatever you want to see on a voice. And so it doesn't really matter unless that voice has a colloquial accent to it.
Yeah. I mean, eventually we'll do Pocahontas and we'll have a nice big discussion about cultural insensitivity and how Disney and all the animation industry is guilty of it, because animation is based off of stereotypes. Like, in order for something to communicate, you have to generalize. But I digress. That's a whole nerdy cops discussion, a whole different episode, but... Anyway, very good question, Brandon. Very good voicemail. Let's play the next one. This is by Hannah. Hannah. Hey, Hannah! Did I get my package in the mail? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? I don't know.
Hi, Rotoscopers. This is Hannah calling. Given now we live in the age where films such as Sausage Party and Anomalisa have come out, do you feel, since you guys started, a perception of, oh, animation is equals cartoons, therefore it's kids, has kind of shifted? I know it kind of really hasn't changed in my family, but it was just a question I had. Okay, Mason, congratulations on your DreamWorks stuff. Morgan, congratulations for your bundle of joy. And Chelsea, just keep on yodeling. Thanks for being awesome.
Hey, and Chelsea, no congratulations. Just keep yodeling. Thanks, Anna.
Chelsea has a lot to be congratulated about. Come on.
Come on, yes. So her actual question, do we feel like the perception of cartoons are just for kids has shifted in any way? And I'm going to say no. I don't think it has. I think for those niche audiences that have watched those, I think they would have watched them either way. And I think that people will watch, you know, Five-O Goes West either way. Those movies did a good job of playing to their audience. And these movies do a good job of playing to their audience. There, I feel like there's more of an audience with the kids, or at least it's more of a long-standing audience. So it hasn't shifted.
Hey, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. It's Mark. I hear you guys are doing An American Tale, Five-O Goes West. And I'm looking forward to hearing your opinion on that. I saw that movie years and years ago when I was younger, and I saw it before I saw An American Tale. So I can't really remember it much. All I remember is, you know, Jimmy Stewart as the canine sheriff. And that brings me to my question for today. If you could pick any classic Hollywood actor or actress to have done a voice role in an animated film who has never done a voice role in an animated film, who would it be? You know, for me, I think Gregory Peck would have made a great voice actor. And I know they wanted him in Pocahontas to voice the river before they decided not to go with that character. So yeah, just wondering which Hollywood actor and actress you guys would have wanted to be a voice actor. Good. Look forward to hearing your responses. Bye.
So Mark's question was, if you could take any live actor or actress who has not starred in an animated film yet, who would you pick to star in an animated film?
Okay. Let's see. You know, there's a lot of most, I feel like most of the ones that I would pick have already starred. So that's one that I would have to look really deep into, and it would end up being a nobody really. Cause all of the big people I feel have, don't you?
Yeah. The entire cast of Arrested Development, I think.
Yeah.
It has been in animation. Even Lucille, who is my favorite character.
Yes.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. I think he should be in an animated film.
Yeah? Well, all right. You should call him.
I'm here to lead, not to read. Often imitated, but never replicated.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think that Harrison Ford would be pretty good in animation. That'd be kind of fun.
I feel like he has, though.
Yeah? Has Harrison Ford been in? Carrie Fisher, you can leave out. You can leave her in the loony bin. Mark Hamill has done a lot of voice work.
Oh, yes. He is the Joker in my mind.
Yeah.
Hi, Rotoscopers. It's Rachel. So I'm excited to hear what you guys think about American Tale, Five-O Goes West. This is one that I think is a cute little movie. I think it was probably my introduction to Westerns as a kid. But I don't know. I just enjoy it. It's, you know, Jimmy Stewart is so fun. And I can recognize its flaws as an adult, but I still enjoy it. And I love the song Dreams to Dream. I think it is so pretty. I actually sang it for a recital once, and I just think it's a really pretty song by the late James Horner, and you can hear the version by Linda Ronstadt, and so, yeah, that's kind of my thoughts, so I'll be curious to hear what you think.
Thanks for your thoughts, Rachel.
Thanks for your thoughts there, Rachel. All right. This last one is from Rose.
Hi, Rose Gopers. I just saw An American Tale, and I thought it was good. I really enjoyed how it was like the immigrants came to America, and I like the themes you touched on, like child labor. That was really surprising. I didn't expect them to go there. But for the rest of them, I thought it was just good. I loved all the characters, and the songs were nice. Except I think one felt out of place, but most of them worked well with the story. And I think my favorite part was definitely Tyho. I think I say his name. I love that character. He was like just like the best, like cutest, like animated character. I really enjoyed An American Tale. I'd probably give it 3.5 stars. Thank you.
Tell me you will never roam. You'll be by your fireside.
Man, exhausting episode. We've been battling the jungle Wi-Fi that Chelsea is in. Like, seriously, Chelsea is in a bamboo hut right now, and she's got her tiny little Wi-Fi router, and there's monkeys throwing coconuts at her, and centipedes are all crawling around her like King
Kong. Amazing how much I was able to get out of such
She's dodging
vintage
poison arrow darts. You know,
I just got off the river. Literally, I just got off of Iguazu Falls today. So,
oh, you just took the falls down?
I just jumped off.
Pocahontas style. Yeah, if she did that down the devil's throat, she would like never come back. She would just clip through the bottom of the earth and come back the other side like Pac-Man. Yes. Anyway. All right, folks, thank you so much for listening in during this very technically difficult episode. We promise that Morgan will be back soon. She's doing a lot of work for her company right now, and she's bogged down, so we want to give her the space that she needs to balance that part of her life. But she sends her love and her appreciation for all of our listeners and our patrons. Can we just say,
yes, for sure,
that the Roto Nation, while a ragtag bunch of misfits, is the greatest viewer base and fan base that ever lived, because they're so cool, and because of all the support that we get from our patrons. So when we started our Patreon, we planned on hopefully getting enough contributions to start this video chat stuff. We would like to eventually do a once a week news podcast. It is coming. We're waiting to reach that level. If you are interested in contributing to the podcast or the website or whatever, you can go to rotoscopers.com/patron or rotoscopers.com/patreon to learn more about how you can support our show. And we just want to thank everybody who has lent their support, and for everyone in the chat who's been making it such a great episode for us, helping us with material to use, because our document was like 5 lines this episode. We were just winging it the whole time. I don't know if you could tell. Anyway,
well, it wasn't.
It wasn't. This is episode 131, people. For show notes, links, and more, go to www.rotoscopers.com/131. And be sure to comment and leave your reviews, your thoughts, and your opinions. Like, all of the contributions and all the engagement that we have with you lets us know that y'all still like us and still want to listen to us. So please participate. Rotoscopers is on Twitter. When tweeting about this episode, you can use the hashtag AnimAddicts or AnimAddicts131. If you want to send a voicemail, and somebody on the chat was wondering how to do voicemail, go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails or call 406-646-6575. That's 406-646-ROTO. You can also support the show by going to rotoscopers.com/Amazon to join Chelsea in the Amazon. Just kidding. But if you want some of her authentic camping gear and hiking gear, because she is literally out in the jungle with a machete fighting off the Guarani and their poison darts and poison arrows and stuff, then you can go on Amazon.com, start your free trial. Rotoscopers.com/Audible is where you can get your free Audible trial. Like, Audible is only the place to get all of your audio books. And we also have a store, rotoscopers.com/store. We can get roto swag like I'm wearing right now. And seriously, our shirts are so discounted by now. We're paying you to take them away. It's all about volume, folks. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher Radio. If you love the show, then please leave feedback. Give us that 5-star rating. Keep us going. We're on Hypeable. We're on Animated Views. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever. So if you want to follow the radiant Morgan Stradling, you can follow her at Morgan Stradling on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. At Chelsea Robson to follow the lovely and talented Chelsea on Twitter. She also has ChelseaRobson.com is her website. You can sample her music, find out when she is playing near you, performing near you. I'm a little more complicated. My Twitter, I don't have a Twitter anymore, actually. My Instagram handle is at MasonSMTX. With the fall semester starting, I'm starting animation classes, so I'm taking an advanced animation class. I'll be doing my own 30-second animated short.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I will be posting my progress on it on my blog, which is thisanimatedlife.blogspot.com, kind of a playoff of This American Life that you listen to on NPR if you're a snob. And thisanimatedlife.blogspot.com is where you can find all of my works in progress. I just put a storyboard up yesterday for a new short that I'm doing called Space Feratu. It's about a vampire in space. I mean...
Sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, the story about writes itself.
Pretty much. And I've already got my character sheets and stuff. I'm going to start modeling and rigging soon, I suppose. We love you guys, and thank you so much for sticking with us for this episode. Chelsea, do you have anything else to say? I think we about wrapped it up.
Yeah, also, if you're just, you know, throwing it out there one more time, you didn't mention my Snapchat, you can go to Chelsea M. Robson and check me out on Snapchat there. I have been posting a couple, about a minute or so a day of footage of my trip. So definitely place to go. Also, the next episode, we are going to be doing storks.
Storks!
We're probably going to be recording that the first week of October, because I will be back in my hometown and we'll have better internet access, is my hope. So that's the movie that's coming up next. So make sure to support your local animation theater that hosts animated films by going to see the movie Storks, just so that we can talk about it. We're going to have a great time. And until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers. We're the top-rated animation podcast on iTunes, though.
Or at least in our minds.
We are, at least in our minds. I mean, we're pretty dang good. Hold on, iTunes, Animation Addicts.
Oh, stop.
Yeah, we're still... Anyway, you can report a concern.
I think we're pretty
though.
Good.
My concern is that we're too attractive.
Everybody's going to be jumping in and saying, actually.
Actually.
So, but it's okay.
You have a 4.999 rating. You're not perfect.
A internet caillou. Caillou. Ainda não voltou.
Alguém me se vê? Ela vai voltar.
3 ou 10?
3.
10. Tá. 1, 2, 3. Tá.